You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 10th of August, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com. As it's Truth Will Out Radio, that means that we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us today, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing tonight?
I'm gutted, Sven. Gutted.
Gutted? Why?
Yeah, what's up? We've lost Alex.
We've lost Alex.
Lost Mr. Jones.
Right. Sorry, I was thinking, Alex? Which Alex is this? Well, to be quite honest, I mean, it just proves he's not really controlled opposition, is he? If they've cut him off like that.
Well, I've got a different theory to that. I think establishment's turned on its minions just like it did in the French Revolution. And I've got as much sympathy for him. I know people are saying it's not right, which it isn't. I've got as much sympathy for him as he had for me when my channel was shut down, which was zilch.
I'm sure he had no sympathy for you. But the thing is, I mean, I look at it that when these civic nationalists, conspiracy theory people, I think most of them, you know, their heart is in it. They do have integrity. And, you know, they, and that way I can't really say, well, they're controlled opposition because they do seem to believe in what they're doing. Maybe Alex Jones is covering a few things up, but maybe a few, but I do see him as being a positive because, you know, he was one of the first people that I came across was Alex Jones. You know, you start on Alex Jones and you end up with Adolf Hitler. That's the way it works. And you go, I went from Alex Jones to Henry Mackell to watching Holocaust denial movies by, I think the guy was called Holocaust Denier.
I remember. You know,
Buchenwald, a dumb portrayal of evil. And then I started looking through these other blogs and then I come across stuff black people don't like and then Amren and then Total Fascism and then Daily Stormer. But it all starts with, you know, Alex Jones and Henry Macko and just questioning these things. And if they weren't there, and I think if I'd suddenly came across, you know, hardcore racial nationalism, you know, I probably would have been a bit shocked by it.
You need breaking in, you mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, well, I can understand that. I really can. But, you know, I've had some dudes with his followers, and as soon as I had a go in last time, I had a certain amount of trolls from Israel come and attack me. So, you know, it is what it is.
He's definitely covering things up for Israel. I've heard he's blaming China for him being taken down.
China's running Hollywood now.
But, you know, there are a lot of people that,
Arabs.
You know, that do come from Alex Jones to us, that, and David Icke as well. People that are into
it just
him.
Depends how long, though, because some people do come across, you know, 100 years, some take longer. That's the problem.
Well, they'd have to be pretty low standards to just stay there stationary at Alex Jones. I mean, you'd have to be pretty low standard, I would have thought, low IQ.
Yeah, it's a fair comment.
You know, not the best of people. But I think it's a shame he's gone, but it has drawn attention to the fact that there is censorship, and that is one channel being censored that may draw the attention of Donald Trump. He's already spoken up about Republicans being censored on Twitter, and he said he's going to investigate that. He's been interviewed by Alex Jones before. He's on good terms with Alex Jones. So the fact he's banned, you know, that's going to draw Trump's attention, which is good. It's the same as the fact that Tommy Robinson was jailed. That drew the attention of lots of people around the world that were unaware that people like Jez Turner had been jailed, or Alison Shablow being prosecuted, or, you know, Josh Bonehill being in jail for a cartoon. Nobody was aware of that was going on. And they all thought Tommy Robinson was the first to get shut down. The same as people are saying now, they're saying, oh, InfoWars is the first site to be shut down. It's not the first site, but it's the first large one that's drawing attention. That's the thing. And
that's a fair comment. But like I said, I do think it's the establishment turning on its minions, because for a long time, I mean, even when Mark Dice's site went down, it didn't take Alex Jones that long to get it back up again for him. I followed that really intensely, and he said he knew people at YouTube and etc. And soon, you know, it wasn't a day gone by, and Mike Dice's site was back up again. So, you know,
well, it could be, you know, it could be. They think we're all expendable, don't they?
I'm sure they do. Had that always been the case from the French to the Russian?
And everything gets more and more politically correct. And as it gets more politically correct, the people that don't go along with that political correctness, they find themselves marginalised more and more and more. I mean, if you look back, you know, at the time of our grandparents, every single one of them would be classed as a fascist, racist Nazi today.
They would. Yeah, they would. You're completely. Right. I mean, what really gets me is I was watching some Antifa stuff this week, and they're being called fascists now.
Yeah, I've heard this. Well, it's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's like they're arguing over who is the real anti-fascist. Who's the one that's really against the fascists? Is it the civic nationalists or is it the Antifa? That is one real bugbear that I have with the alt-light is calling the Antifa fascists and also calling them brown shirts. When the brown shirts. Yeah, I've heard them calling the left brown shirts. When, you know, the brown shirts were formed to protect nationalist meetings from Antifa and communists who would go in there and smash them up, exactly the same as they are doing today. Yeah. Now, I do wonder, I was watching Paul Weston the other day, and I knew, just before he said it, I knew he was going to blame the Nazis on something. He was going to compare it to the Nazis. And you hear Anne-Marie Waters say, calling the Antifa brown shirts and calling them fascists. And, you know, you do wonder if maybe they've been given some money by somebody and they've said, you know, and in every video, just say something negative about the Nazis or call the Antifa fascists. And we'll give you £1,000 a month donations.
Well, yeah. Well, remember when the, I can't remember what they were called now. Was it National, they were closed down anyway with jail sentence.
National Action.
National Action, yeah. That's right. Well, how come the Antifa never closed down? This is what people should be asking. These are the ones that go around with masks. These are the ones that cause all the violence. Yeah, no threat at all to them.
Well, it seems obvious to us. It just doesn't seem that obvious to the public. I mean, National Action were never accused of any violent crime before they were shut down. There was somebody attacked someone in a supermarket, but they weren't a member of National Action. They had bought a National Action flag, but they had also bought an ISIS flag, and they'd stopped using the National Action flag in their videos, and they were using the ISIS flag, and yet they still got accused of, you know, in the media, they said, oh, they were part of National Action. But that was the only...
Well, even an attack of a supermarket, I mean, that's nothing to what Antifa has done.
No. Well, everything Antifa do is comes under the heading of terrorism, because terrorism is it can be just damaging public property or physical violence or the threat of physical violence with the goal of achieving a political aim. And then it is political.
But I think the problem is that their aim is the same as the government's aim, so that's why they get off with it.
Well, they have tacit approval, don't they? They have approval.
Gotta be, don't they?
They don't get punished for it. You know, after Trump's inauguration, there was lots of rioting in Washington, and we were all saying, brilliant. Finally, the Antifa are going to get it. They're going to get 10 years for this. You know, they've done that right on Trump's inauguration day, right by there by the White House, right in the middle of Washington, D.C. And the last of them was let off the other week. Let off.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Setting fire to things, weren't they? Setting fire to bins and smashing up McDonald's.
Trump
and
Towers. And
yeah. And they just let them off. And then the same happened here. There was trouble. National Action did a demonstration in Liverpool, and the left turned up, and they were literally tearing up cobblestones and throwing them at the police. The police were injured. There was lots of damage was done on that day. Nobody in National Action was charged with any violence, but there were people on the left that were, and they were just let off. I mean, I think what the judge actually said, you know, he sentenced one of them and then said, oh, but, you know, I can see that you're a good lad, really, and this will have a negative effect on you later in life, so I'm actually going to commute the sentence and you don't have to serve it.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, it's just because they're sure we're right.
Well, and they also get the help from, you know, Soros and these lawyers that offer them free help, don't they? They say, if you get into any trouble while you're demonstrating, call this number. And you'll have a top lawyer helping you out. Yeah, if only the general public could wake up to it. I think they are, Dennis, you know, looking at the comment sections. Yeah, you do see it in the comment sections. What about the left? You know, they're the ones that are the violent ones. Why aren't they being reported on in the mainstream media?
Well, I think their actions don't do them any favours, like feminism. You know, women look at feminists these days, I think, and don't want nothing to do with them. Even though, you know, they believe in equal rights and all this kind of carry on, but I think they just look at them as men haters.
I don't think a lot of them understand what feminism is really about. A lot of them think it's just about women being made equal with men, being given equal rights. And it's not about that. It's about, you know, it's about putting men down more than anything else.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, we've got... we've got a couple of comments to start with tonight, and we've also going to carry on with looking back over the series as we have done. I think in the last couple of episodes we've gone back looking over the series. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at chapters 9 to 11 tonight. But first of all, we've got a couple of comments, and the first one actually comes from Anglo Falcon in the chat room. He says, can you ask Dennis, how do you think international Jewry will destroy Islam for the New World Order, because it will have to go eventually for the Jews to have their world government? So how do you think that's going to work out, Dennis? Do you think the Jews are going to have to destroy Islam for the New World Order? Well, or what are they going to
initially, I don't think they will. Because what they're doing is bringing all religions together. To make it, you know, one, just to follow the one religion. But I don't think they'll destroy it. I think leaders will all agree, you know, to disagree and eventually come together, barring Christianity. Christianity will not be allowed in the New World Order. And so, yeah, I don't think it'll be destroyed. I think it'll be an amicable agreement for everybody just to follow this one Luciferian God.
Well, I think if you look back in history, the Jews have always worked with the Muslims. They only appear to be having issues now because of Israel, which is there in Palestine. And even then, the Saudi Arabians are working with the Jews in Israel.
Yeah,
it's just recently that there's been this problem, because wherever the Muslims have taken over before, the Jews have been given all the top positions. They were all the tax collectors and the advisors to the Shah and all this sort of thing. And it was always the Jews that opened the gates to allow the Muslims in. If you look at Spain and Bulgaria and Persia, it's always Jews that open up the gates. So they actually work with them. And where you're saying there is Christianity, that's the real enemy. Well, that's the real enemy of Judaism, and it's the enemy of Islam. They both say that Christians are idolaters, and idolaters should be put to death. But in the Quran, it doesn't say that the Jews are idolaters, and in the Talmud, it doesn't say that the Muslims are idolaters, and yet Christians think it's the same God.
I was saying to somebody in a comment not long ago, they were on about a similar subject, you know, about religion and New World Order, and I said, to be quite honest, I think they mentioned Putin as well. I said, to be honest, Putin doesn't really come into the picture now when I think about it. Because the fact is that Russia is today a Christian country with a Christian army. I mean, you must have seen the pictures of soldiers kissing the cross before going to Syria. And the Orthodox Church is in a powerful position today in Russia. So I think there's going to be a World War III, but just because they won't allow a Christian Russia anywhere on the planet. And so whether Putin's for us or not, I think there's going to be a war. Can you hear that?
Yeah. Sorry, there was just something that went across my mute button then, so I couldn't unmute myself. I had this icon that was just stuck there and it wouldn't move out of the way. Yeah, they're certainly going after Putin. Certainly going after Putin with these sanctions, making up this stuff about chemical weapons. They're saying that he's sponsoring terrorism now. So I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, it is. I mean, that is the last real sort of Christian empire.
Yeah, whether or not he agrees with the Holocaust or what, you know, the fact is he's making safe zones in Syria for Christians, and like I said, his army is Christian. So unless he manages to convert them all to Lucifer, then there's going to be a war, isn't there?
Well, I hope not. I hope not. I mean, I do see hope on the horizon. You've got Viktor Orban. He's really standing up for Christianity and Christendom and saying that it needs to be the basis of the Europe of the future. And he's forming his alliances over there. And you've also got Italy, which is, Matteo Salvini. He's making a big point of the fact that he's Catholic and he's a traditional Catholic. And, you know, he goes by what it says in the Bible. And when it says love your neighbor, it means love your Italian neighbor. It doesn't mean love anybody else. And he's been quite clear on that. Plus, you've got Austria. You know, they've talking about Christianity. Bulgaria, hopefully as well. I mean, and Poland, don't forget. Massively Catholic. I think we are going to see a traditional Christian revival, possibly not in Britain. I mean, it's gone too far here, really.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we've got a comment here from Sieg Heil. He says, I can't understand if Hitler had access to secret Masonic documents, why he doesn't make this public. Almost those documents that expose Jews and communists' evil plans. Well, he did make them public in the best possible way. They made that movie, didn't they? Occult Forces, Dennis. A brilliant movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, not only that, he used to have these, you know, certain places where all this memorabilia would be put on display and explain to the public what Freemasonry was all about. I've seen photos myself. But the problem is that, like all the previous other wars we've talked about, there's been a lockdown of media, and America and Britain, people, you know, are only allowed to hear what they're allowed to hear. And it's, you know, he could say all he wanted. I mean, even his declaration of war against America was heavily censored, because he mentioned things in there that they didn't want the American people to know about.
Those exhibitions, the Masonic exhibitions, you read about them, but it seems that the actual information has been disappeared. You know, the what was actually said there, what was on display there, what would have been written next to them. Because, you know, when you go to a museum or an exhibition, you've got lots of writing that's telling you about what you're looking at. None of that seems to really exist anymore. Just a poster for it saying, oh, there's a Freemasonic exhibition. But in every country they liberated, they put these exhibitions on, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. That's right. Just to educate everybody. That's why the Germans fought so hard, because they knew exactly what this war were all about. It was the Allies who would hide the truth and just build the myth of the monster. And so we had troops going over there totally oblivious to the fact that they were killing the one person who would save in generations to come their grandchildren and beyond.
Well, we've got a couple of other questions here that are really to do with the Book of Enoch. This is World History Revisited. He says, if we believe Enoch and the fallen angels, the Nephilim who descended to earth to defile the daughters of man, and most were killed but not all were wiped out by the Great Flood, then who really impregnated Mary? How do we know it wasn't a fallen angel? Well, the angel Gabriel didn't impregnate Mary. He was just the announcer of the good tidings. He certainly didn't impregnate her. And then he goes on to claim that Genesis is taken from other myths. And Genesis isn't taken from other myths. The fact is that we have other myths that are similar from around that time, because you've got different witnesses to these things. They're not all going to be writing the same thing. They're going to be writing about it from their own point of view. And also the way that Genesis is written, if you go back to these first chapters of Genesis, it says this is the generations of, and that what that is saying is this is the tablet that belongs to. And the way that style of writing, this is the tablet that belongs to, goes back 2,000 years before Moses, And that was the way that they used to write on the clay tablets. So the fact that that is the way that it is written shows you that what Moses was writing down, it wasn't oral testimony. It wasn't things that had just been remembered around a campfire. It was actual tablets, family tablets that were actually in his possession that he then wrote down in papyrus, which shows that, this is the genuine article. And the fact that you've got other stories similar from Babylon and elsewhere, you know, that just confirms it. I did an episode. I'm doing a new series with William Fink called Bible for Beginners. And we did episode 1 2 weeks back. And we actually covered this in that. So if anyone's interested in that, check it out. It's on christoginia.org. And there, just before I finished, there was another comment here from Tabor. And he says the Book of Enoch is a fraudulent book that was founded by Jewish Freemason James Bruce. Jesus Christ's words were and are true. That is why he exposed these liars in first century AD. I don't know where he's getting that from, because the Book of Enoch is quoted in the Epistle of Jude. So the actual Book of Enoch was around at that time. It was quoted by the apostles. So it was taken as scripture, basically, at that time. It's not included in the Apocrypha, but we do have copies of it, and in the Dead Sea Scrolls they had copies of the Book of Enoch there. So it was obviously being used in the first century AD by the Christians. They took it as an inspired book, as it were.
Does he mean, is that the original Enoch law?
Well, I don't think it was the original Enoch. Maybe that's what he means, that it wasn't written by Enoch.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, because I'm always wary of things being discovered 2,000 years later or whatever, because I know what the Jews are like, so I'm always wary of that. And I think he's just questioning whether it's the same as the original one, what was mentioned, I think.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I'm sort of saying it's not a fraudulent book. The Book of Enoch that we have today is the same as the Book of Enoch that they had in the first century, but whether or not it was actually written by Enoch, those tablets that I was on about, the Genesis tablets, I mean, those were in the possession of the sons of Noah. But whether they actually had a longer tablet that was the Book of Enoch, I doubt very much, because there's a lot in that book, and that would take up a lot of tablets. That would be quite heavy to carry around, you know. I mean, those first couple of chapters of Genesis, that's it, isn't it? It's just one chapter or two chapters. That's what you could fit on a clay tablet, not a whole book.
Well, so, I asked that because I've been working on a video this week proving that Jesus was a Jew. And part of the video, it goes through the different variations of spelling that they used, and it must have been a dozen at least till they got to the word Jew, in the latter part of the Bible. So, yeah, it's, you know, I sometimes wonder just what they've twisted them, you know, and how they twist them.
The word Jew is an interesting one. I think in the English language, it didn't really come about until a couple of hundred years ago.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
I think they used the letter H.
IEU, IGU, but all, you know, sounding like Jew because it was Judean.
Yeah, that was it. Judean, which wasn't a racial term. It was a Judean citizen. Anyone that was in Judea at the time. I think there was an H as well. Like, because I remember Jerusalem in the original Dowie Reams for Jerusalem, it spells it with an H. And I think it might spell the Jews' names with an H as well.
Right, because there's no J, is there, in Latin?
No, that's it. And if you think that Yahweh, they say Jehovah, so that would sort of tend to mean that if the word Jew began with the same letter, then it would have been written with a Y. Could have been written with a Y as well as
an H. Well, it may well have been at one stage, because, like I said, I went through quite a few. But the thing is that over the cross where it says, you know, they have the initials, I can't remember the proper initials now, IRNL or something like that, which has been translated as King of the Jews, is actually Jesus, you know, a Judean.
And that was also mocking him as well. The king they had on the throne was Herod, and he was a Mongol. Yeah. He was descended from the Edomite Canaanites. And in the books of Flavius Josephus, he's regularly getting, you know, getting stick for this from genuine Judeans who are calling him, you know, a bastard born of ignoble birth. One of them jumps off a cliff afterwards, you know, to prove his courage. And he's saying, yeah, you're born of ignoble birth. You don't deserve to be there. Of course, that's why he killed Jesus, because, you know, he knew he shouldn't be on the throne. He was false. And the Jews today, they call him Herod the Great.
I'm sure they do.
You know, that's who they're descended from, and the Pharisees, these Canaanite mongrels, not the actual people of Israel.
The Babylonians.
Well, we've gone into that before in other podcasts. Well, let's continue with this look back at the series, Dennis. And sure. we got up to part 9, didn't we? And this is where we started getting into the war with the Boers, the Boer War. And I was going to go on.
Well, what I was going to say is that, strikingly enough, a lot of what I've done, I never learned at any point in school, you know, or if they did, it was just like brushed over. There was no, you know, I mean, Boer War was a major war, as was World War One, but they skipped, at my school anyway, they skipped over both of them. Which is fascinating in itself.
Well, why do you think it was that they in particular skipped over the Boer War then?
Well, all I can remember of my history teacher saying to me about the British Empire was that it was not like a normal empire, and it was what you call a good empire, and everybody was happy with it. End of story. That was it. No more. Can you believe that one?
I can't really recall it being mentioned. I can't recall doing anything on it.
Well, I might have asked him, so probably that's why he mentioned it. But I mean, it's strange that an English school doesn't dwell on the English Empire. But now I realise why.
Well, I think we can understand why they didn't want to look into the Boer War as well. I mean, you started this episode with Adolf Hitler with a speech that he gave where he was talking about concentration camps and how they first started. It was the British that first started the concentration camps. And unlike the Germans, the British killed 25,000 women and children in these concentration camps. And when they had these camps going with these women and children in them, they also had a scorched earth policy in their war, which meant that they destroyed communication lines, they destroyed food lines, they destroyed railway lines, they were even blowing up farmhouses, and eventually they were even destroying churches. And what Hitler is highlighting here is that, you know, it's this same behaviour that Britain is engaged in the Second World War. And not Germany.
And a lot of things what Germany's accused of since, you know. So I suppose for a school to go over the Boer War, you'd be having to dodge bullets all the time because you're doing what you accused the Germans of in World War II, in World War I even. But there's some arguments over it being the first time concentration camps were used, but that doesn't really come into it because, you know, the fact is that the British did introduce them down there, and they sent the men abroad, and so consequently the women and children vacated the camps and suffered in them. Also, when you're talking about blowing up these houses, what it was if there's any kind of incident, they would blow up a house, but not only blow the farm or the house up, but everything within a 100-mile radius. So, you know, somebody would nothing to do with the incident whatsoever, would suffer badly.
Scorched earth policy, total war. That's what it was. And they were also using all the coloureds from the colonies as well as cannon fodder.
That's right, they brought them all in, didn't they? Because at first they were struggling, especially on horseback, with the Boers, because obviously the Boers are used to the terrain, so they brought in from Canada, New Zealand, and, you know, to try and make it a level playing field. But yeah, like I said, plenty of troops call them.
So I mean, that's really unfair. I mean, that's not a fair battle, is it? If you're going to start bringing in all these foreigners, mercenaries that you're bringing in, non-whites.
Well, the colonies aren't they? What they've obviously conquered, if you like, and obviously every country they go in, they more or less create, you know, an opening for the native, if you like, to join the British Army, and they're used as they were in World War II.
And there was, it was discovered what was going on eventually by somebody called Emily Hobhouse. And she made it known to the British public, didn't she, what was actually going on over there. And there was, it was a big scandal, and there was uproar in Britain that this was being done in the name of Britain, and a stop was put to it. And, you know, I've never heard of her before until, you know, seeing it in your series there, Dennis.
Well, it's not an English way of doing things. You know, I mean, like I said before many times, this to me is not the English Empire. It's an elite Talmudic empire, which the elite have sold out to. And Emily Hobhouse, obviously there's another media block. Everything was coming through, I think it was Johannesburg, and then directed to where they wanted it to go, London, and said exactly what they wanted to say. So very difficult to get the news out what was really happening. But eventually it did leak out, and this woman really, she went out there and noted everything, went back, managed to get into Parliament and explain the situation. I'm sure she had some enemies, but she finally got through. And when the British public heard of how they were treating the women and children of the Boers, obviously they were in uproar, because, you know, it's not the way that the English do war.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's just not British. You know, there's a certain, you know, there is a certain way that the British were viewed throughout the rest of the world, and this was shocking to them. I mean, as I said, you know, I wasn't really taught about it at school, but I know that people that are older than me that were taught about the British Empire, you know, they were taught that, you know, they had to set a very good example, and that the British were known for justice and keeping the peace in these countries. And I know a lot of bad things did go on, but they did prevent the blacks from killing one another. They did prevent the Indians from killing one another. And they did bring, you know, peace to a lot of these areas, and for the first time. And also civilization. It was something to be proud of. The British people used to be proud of it. You know, we didn't know all these horrible things that were also going on. But this was also the beginning of the start of these Freemasonic foundations as well, wasn't it?
Correct.
Over there?
Correct. And obviously we know about the Masons now. Yeah, you know, it was, I mean, it's, I look at it as a British, as like the Anglo-Saxon type of Britain, who's totally, you know, infused, totally different to a Talmudic outlook.